Welcome to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening. And I've got to listen to the nature. The garden knows what it wants, you know. It's a co-relationship. I'm very pleased to have in studio with me Liz Johnson. She's a longtime herbalist and co-owner of Magus Books. Hi, welcome to Food Freedom Radio.
Hi, I am so glad to be here.
Oh, thrilled to have you. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I started studying herbalism in college. It's not what I studied in college, but it's absolutely what got me started. I started by making incense and just playing around with stuff, and then people thought I knew something about herbs. So they would ask me for help with their medical issues. And I owned books, and I could look things up. And eventually I went, this is more fun than making things that smell nice, so I should study. I should find places, people that I can learn from. So that's what I did. I set out to cobble together an education on this subject in addition to my own research, which then started involving going to the U of M, which is where I was in college, to their medical library, reading studies on herbs, looking at going up to the historical medical library and looking at ancient, well, falling apart texts, let's put it that way. Brown paper with brown ink falling apart in my hands as I'm gently caressing these lovely little gems of knowledge. And it just grew from there. It's more fun than anything else that I do in my day, is helping someone, standing next to them basically, while they figure out how to have a healthier and therefore happier existence in life. Because they do the work. They get my advice, but they have to do the work.
We're in such a reductionist conventional thinking. It's like, it's not, this is the one plant for the one thing. And because it's not all, you can't reduce everything like that.
Right. Yeah. Plants are complex little creatures. They have a lot going on. And one plant isn't necessarily the answer for not only for everyone, but even for one person. I'm very fond of saying that we're all unique. And one size rarely fits all, really and truly.
And every plant depends on the soil that it's in. It's all living soil.
Yes. Ah, absolutely. It will absorb things from those soils that you might not expect them to. A great example would be shavegrass or horsetail, which is a delightful herb that grows here. And here you will not have this problem, but it also grows in Kentucky. And it will take the nicotine right out of the soil and become full of nicotine if it's growing anywhere near a tobacco farm, for example. Mm-hmm. So those changes and those variations matter not just in how the medicine gets applied, but in what's going to be safe for people. And all of that makes a difference. The medication a person takes can alter what they can take. You don't want to take the same – you don't want to take an herb that's going to mechanistically accomplish the same thing as the medication. You're just overtaking your medication at that point. So you have to take all of these wide factors into account to come up with a good herb or combination of herbs that can truly help someone as they go forward.
So now you've been doing this for 26 years.
At least
now. Okay. So I want to go back to those early days. So what first attracted you to herbalism, and what was the culture like right now? Was that something that was seen like is super fringe at the time, or was it?
I don't know if it was super fringe, but what really got me started was during the end of my high school years and the beginning of my college years, over about a 3-year span, my father kept having chest pains, and he went to his physician and he went to the local hospital. They sent him on either to the Mayo or the U of M, and he bounced back and forth between those two for a good couple of years of that 3-year span, being misdiagnosed. And eventually he had corrective surgery, which was really important for him. But as he went through this, my thought was, oh, thank goodness for surgery. Thank goodness for penicillin. I would have died as an infant if I hadn't had penicillin. But there have to be some other choices. There have to be some other ways of approaching health and healing that can work with these things and positively affect the outcomes that people are getting. There was no reason for him to suffer for 3 years the way he did. And it was a lot of pain. He would clutch his chest, drop to the floor, bang his head into the wall, which freaked everybody out because he was an epileptic. No hitting in the head was a standard rule in the house. So that notion of perhaps if someone with a different perspective on health and healing had examined him, had participated in his health care, the outcomes might have been different. It might have been less painful. It might have been caught sooner. And the reason it wasn't caught was he was, and I'm putting this in quotes, too young for the health issues he was having. So it couldn't have been that. And he was in too good a physical shape for the health conditions he was having. So it couldn't have been those things. None of that was true. And that got me started. That got me started at trying to find alternatives that work well with what people are already doing. And I'd say at that time, 90% of healthcare, people went to their physicians. It's now dropped to 50. People turn to other methods of health at the rate of 50% or so, according to the studies that have been done in the U.S., to make sure that they're as healthy as they can be. And I think that makes sound sense. When what we consider the doctor's office today started, they started by aligning themselves with big business. And that's how they were able to squeeze out other modalities of health and healing. That's one of the ways that that happened. And that led to a lot of physicians becoming company doctors. And what's the role of a company doctor? Functionality. Can you get out the door, get yourself to work, and do your job and go home again? A lot of these alternative healthcare practices are about more optimized health. So where you might get a test at your doctor's office that has a range of scores and you're inside the range, my range for that blood test might be much, much narrower. Not because you're in horrible health, but because you're anxious and you get scared about things that you don't need to get scared about, or you're sluggish and you just can't – you can do your job, but you can't get motivated to do much else. Well, okay. Let's get you to a more midline point in that blood test by using herbs, because you're not ready for prescription medication. You're far too healthy for the prescription medication. That really is for somebody who can't function. Let's get you something that gets you away from that mid-ground of, I'm not really healthy and I don't really feel good, but I'm not treatable. Well, you are in the herbal world. You are in a lot of alternative health modalities. I just happen to love herbs.
Yeah. Well, and humans and herbs have a long history. Now, archaeologic evidence indicates that humans have been using medicinal plants for 60,000 years. That's like Wikipedia right there, 60,000 years. Mm-hmm. But written evidence of herbal remedies date back over 5,000 years.
Oh, yes.
Give us a little brief history of humans and herbs.
It has been a fascinating study, and it has amounted to and led to this huge just volumes from culture after culture of empirical knowledge about these herbs. So short-term effectiveness of herbs is really well understood within each of these systems, whether we're talking about the various European systems, Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, Unami, which comes from the Middle East, or Kempo, which is Japanese. And all around the world, there are even people who are now going into various parts of Africa to speak with healers there, not in order to take the remedies away, but rather to ensure their survival. And so they're documenting these things, and they're making sure that we have this knowledge going forward. Because to be perfectly honest, most of the medications we have, their kernel of knowledge about them started with herbalism. Let's take this plant apart, figure out what the chemistry is, and figure out if we can develop a medication from a component of this medicine. My criticism of that is that sometimes the so-called unimportant companion chemicals in the plant turns out they play an important role. For example, in the case of aspirin, there are people who can't take aspirin. It upsets their stomach. The few studies that have been done on white willow bark with people who cannot tolerate aspirin finds that the vast majority of them tolerate white willow bark, even though it's aspirin. So that unimportant chemistry starts to become really important. So as we go through all of this, whether we're talking about Galen in ancient Greece, whether we're talking about TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, we're pulling all of that coming forward into the modern era, and we're able to use different systems and approaches to healing, as well as different sets of knowledge about these herbs, to create a healing experience that's, I think, the most multicultural and the most positive that we've ever had in the world.
And the word trust comes to me, because trust and trusting ourselves and our healing. And you also use the word participant.
Mm-hmm.
So riff on that a little bit. Does that make sense to you? That part of it is each of us have our own path. It's not just finding the one person in the white coat that's going to tell us what to do, but it's kind of being a participant, learning to listen to our body, learning how different herbs understand, using experts, people who have studied things, mm-hmm. and resources.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite things to do with my clients is if they're willing to use a tea, which is my preference because you will taste it. And you have to take 5 minutes out of your life to make it, so you have to prioritize yourself just briefly every day a few times, and I love that. Mm-hmm. But that tea is going to taste okay, at least okay, maybe even good, but it's going to taste fine for weeks. And then almost inevitably, there's an herb in there that does not actually taste good. And as soon as your body doesn't need the chemistry from that herb anymore, it will let you taste the yucky part. And that is always how I start with my clients, to say, listen to your body. When this tastes bad, that's when you need to come back, because we need to change your tea. You won't be done, but you'll be done with, and I can usually point out this herb or that herb, because this herb's actually really bitter, or this herb's actually really acrid, and that's a horrible taste for most Americans. So that notion of being an active participant in your own health and the empowerment that that can give you as a person, not only in your personal life, not only when you come see me, but the way that changes how you speak to a physician, that you start to view your physician as someone you're consulting about your health, and that you have needs you want to make sure get met. I think that kind of care makes you a more active participant with your regular physician and what they want to accomplish with you. And I think it helps the physician understand that you are not the results of a study.
That's beautiful. So we're talking to herbalist Liz Johnson. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and we'll be right back talking more about herbalism. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and joined in studio with me is Liz Johnson, a longtime herbalist and co-owner of Magus Healing Center. So tell us a little bit about Magus.
Magus is this wonderful shop that was founded by Roger Williamson about 35 years ago or so. He wanted a place where people could explore any form of spirituality, and that started to involve the tools and implements you might want, which for a lot of traditions includes herbs. Well, then he was stuck. So he's bringing in all these wonderful things and eventually discovers that he just needs to hire somebody who understands the herb market and understands why people want herbs for several reasons, whether this is for their symbolic uses, say somebody wants to put a little spell bag together so that they can reinforce their hopes for a new job, or they have diabetes and they want, or they're pre-diabetic and they want a little help before they get on their medications. See if we can kick that down the road a little bit using some delightful herbs or whatever the medical issue might be. And so he hired me after a time. And we just grew from there. So the whole focus of the shop has always been really the core of the American value of religious freedom. That's always been its point. So there is a section on every religion we can find in the world, occasionally even just one book because that's all there is. But even atheism is covered. Any system where you have an opinion about any form of deity, we try to cover. That's its main focus, and it's delightful. We have fun stuff, all kinds of wonderful things. And he just did a great job sort of mentoring everybody along that process and helping people whenever they come into the store when he was available. It was a joy to watch, and it's a joy to get to continue that legacy.
I remember. So it was a small store in Dinkytown a long time ago.
Yeah, we had three locations in Dinkytown. It started at the back of what's called the Dinkydale Dome, or the Dinkydale Mall, which is – a mall is a gross exaggeration, but that's what it's called. And it was a closet. It really was a tiny little space. Eventually we moved to the front of that section, and then finally across the street in that neighborhood. We are now out of that neighborhood. We're about a 5-minute drive from there in Minneapolis on Central Avenue, near 19th and Central, actually. A wonderful spot for us. It's been a real joy to be in a place that's a growing artistic community again, whereas Dinkytown had run through that part of their urban cycle, and they were now in the moneyed side of that system. Just, it's a natural ebb and flow of neighborhoods. So we're back in another artistic area of Minneapolis, and we love it there. The store itself has always just been a wonderful meeting ground. It's a place where you genuinely might hear a Buddhist have a conversation with a druid about philosophy and life and God and whatever else you might imagine. And it's a fun place because of those conversations.
I love it. I absolutely love it. So what's behind the name?
Magus itself is the singular form of the word magi. Now, you might have heard of the three magi, depending on how you grew up, or the three wise men. So a magus is someone who is a man, actually. It's the masculine ending. I hate to say this, and please don't shoot the messenger, but the way the feminine ending is would be spelt as M-A-G-A.
You know, I was going to say, is it M-A-G-A? But, you know, yeah. I actually see this as a positive. I do. Because, you know, Mega, I mean, let's rebrand Mega, which, you know, on a really super deep level. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get some Giordano Bruno here in the third segment because okay. I want to go there. Because I think Excellent. That there is something to this. And if we could rebrand that, it'd be like when Gandalf frees King Theridon from that web of Saradom's mask.
Yes.
And we need magic to do that. But anyhow, that's just me talking.
Maybe
that doesn't make any sense.
A rainbow baseball cap.
Pink glasses.
With the MAGA. It would just confuse everybody, and that would be delightful.
I like that. That sounds great.
But it does. It means wise man. It means somebody who studies life beyond their own existence, basically. You're going to try and understand how the universe works in whatever language or context you want to put that. And if that means you study astrology because it's a good metaphor for life for you, great. Study that. Whatever your level of belief is about it or in it is fine. If it's the I Ching, great. However you want to work that is positive, as long as you're working on self and understanding the world around you. That's the primary goal. Magi were originally essentially have priesthood, will travel kind of guys. They would travel what to them was the world, which is largely in and around the Middle East. And if your crops were failing in your town, well, they had a ritual they could do. You just hand them some cash, you know, give them something, and they'll perform the ritual so that you have a better harvest next year. Or, you know, whatever the issue was, you're getting flooded out. We've got something for flooding. We've got that. Eventually, that word and that practice got absorbed into a specific religious practice. And for those curious, it's Zoroastrianism. Mm. And those folks then, magi became the term for their priests. But that was later. That was much later. Originally, it was just guys who had basically been to the equivalent of college, wandering around going, yeah, I can fix that. I can help you with that. Did you need some administrative work? I got you covered. I've got the training.
History is really a fun thing. And again, it's all that. And so I want to talk a little bit more about just herbalism and how herbalism can make a difference for people's lives. And you want to give some examples of that?
Oh, I would be happy to. There are so many good examples of that. Everything from my favorite cases that would be considered the heavier or more difficult cases include the number of babies that I've not been in the room to help create, but I've helped created. A lot of fertility cases. Cancer, helping people through their cancer healing process. There are absolutely herbs that and studies will back me up. This is not a random empirical knowledge thing. This really is – there are studies that back up that there are herbs that help make chemotherapy and or radiation therapy more comfortable and therefore more tolerable so you can finish your cycles, as well as more effective. China has spent a lot of time and money trying to prove that their medicine works, and they've invested a lot in creating double-blind studies on this stuff. So the knowledge is out there. It's just not what's most culturally readily available to us. Those herbs are hugely helpful. Again, I mentioned diabetes earlier. For people who are in those early stages of diabetes or have a strong family history of diabetes and they're concerned about it, there's a whole slew of herbs that people have used for thousands of years. And if that means that your blood sugars are better managed today so that you're not going to get that diagnosis for 10 years instead of 2 years, that's a win. That's a win for you. That's a win for the medical system. It's a win for everyone. So those would be the three big heavy-hitting things that I feel I've done probably the most with. But at the same time, I absolutely see people come in because they're just off. Or my favorite ever, I would like a designer tea. I literally was told that at one point. Delightful gentleman. And what we discovered going through his family history and listening to his symptoms was that there's this huge propensity for stroke in his family. And so looking at herbs that help blood circulation, herbs that will help stave off, again, the what looks like the likely cause of death lying in this person's future. And we all have them. Ayurvedic medicine phrases it very beautifully. We all have a way in which we will die. We all have our shadow that follows us and will grow as the sun rises above us and our life lengthens. It's not that we don't have those weaknesses. We all do. It's just that they're all different.
They're all different. They're all personalized. And it's actually an infinite universe out there.
It really is.
It really is an infinite universe. And we're going to take a break. We're talking with Liz Johnson, a longtime herbalist and co-owner of Magus Books. We'll be right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio.
One day after school, my nanny told me, Randy, people can be cruel, so when they get to you, forget about them, see the world the way you wanna see it, find the thing you wanna be. Life can be agonizing, why not accessorize and ride? Pink glasses, sparkle through your stress and strife, break that glass half empty, lease on life. Cause even when your ship is sinking in molasses, in another blink you'll find your glass is fuller than you think with your pink glasses on. And blue beyond description, 10-4. Luckily for you, they're non-prescription and sure. Happy days are sometimes rare. You can change your lousy outlook if you dare. In a fabulous pair of rocking glasses. See the truth and cut the crap.
Bright pink glasses. So this is Randy Rainbow, and he was in town last week, and I got to see him, and it was so much fun. And that song really, I mean, it was like, it just really lifted me up somehow. Just this whole idea of bright pink glasses. And, you know, he was, and I think my grandmother had those. Those
cat style glasses, yeah.
With the little rhinestones on them.
Thanks to Randy.
Thanks to Randy, yeah. And it's so sweet. And I know both you and I were pointing on this, you know, mega. Mm-hmm. And we can redefine mega, and we could do it in these nice bright pink glasses with rhinestones. So what would that mean? What would that mean if we had mega bright pink rhinestone glasses?
Well, I absolutely think if you are studying the universe and how it works and your place in it and everyone else's place in it, you begin to learn that you create your reality to an amazing degree. You begin to learn that the attitude that you approach life with engenders the kind of responses you're likely to get. This does not mean that that person who's having a horrible life right now isn't going to lash out at you. They might.
And it doesn't mean if something horrible happens, like a child died, that you're bad.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that.
It means, though, that you set yourself up for the best possible outcome under the circumstances you find yourself in, with some dignity, with some grace, with a way of living your life that you feel good about and that makes the people around you feel good that you're there. And I think that that matters. I think that covers both your own needs and it covers that need to have something greater than yourself that you address. And we all have that need. You got to have a reason to get out of bed beyond you almost always. That's just a human thing. So I love that about that notion of MAGA or MAGUS as the person who really wants to steer their own ship and wants to do it in a way that helps everyone around them.
Yeah, in studio. And there's so many different ways I'm going to go. So I'm going to jump into mugwort because there was two things that I listened to that last week. One is I got to Randy Rainbow. And the other thing I found out about Maria Rodell, and she's with the famous Rodell family. They've been very active in organic gardening for a long time. For instance, they were the publishers of Prevention Magazine, and there's still the Rodell Institute today. But she has a new book out called Love, Nature, and Magic. And she talked about when I heard it, I'm going to have her on the show on the last week in March. She's coming on Food Freedom Radio, so we're really excited about that.
Very excited.
But she talked about mugwort. And so you want to talk about mugwort a little bit?
I love mugwort. I think mugwort's fantastic. I have a number of friends who have followed Stephen Herod Bruner's recipe for mugwort beer from his book, Sacred and Herbal Healing Beers. And it's delightful. Both its taste, I hate to tell you, because mugwort's not the best tasting herb on the planet.
I love the taste.
The beer is fantastic.
I absolutely love
the
taste.
Do you love the taste? And I always tell my clients, if you like the taste of the thing, there's probably a 90% chance that it's because your body wants something that's in there. And it's hiding from you whatever it is that you wouldn't like the taste of. And it's sort of like for anyone who's ever eaten blueberries until they tasted bad. Because if you eat blueberries enough, if you just sit there and eat blueberries, they're sweet, they're delicious, they're lovely, and then eventually the taste changes.
I'm gonna be in denial right now. No, I'm just
teasing.
I'm playing back, but I'm sorry.
And if you've never done it, you've never done it. But it's one of the easiest examples I can give you of your body saying, okay, that was very nice. I'm full of that now. Please stop. Eat something else. And if you like the taste of an herb that has a reputation for not being fabulous, like mugwort, there's a good chance you need it.
So this is the story that Maria Rodell shared about mugwort, is that it can be very invasive.
Yes.
And so she, very deep in organic gardening, and she was struggling to get rid of it, and it was just really bugging her. And she said, for the first time in my life, I thought about Roundup.
Oh, wow.
You know, and she was like, but I can't do that because I'm Maria Rodell. I mean, I can't use Roundup. But this was really, really bothering her. And so she went into that, and then all of a sudden mugwort, she talked to it, mm-hmm. and it was this transformation. And out of that experience with mugwort came her book, Love, Nature, and Magic. And so – And for some reason, I think, and I don't, and that's why I'm having some doubt putting in my glasses. But in some ways, I think we need to kind of rediscover magic in life.
I think so. I think wonderment in life is amazing. And when you think about, you can view the world as mechanical, robotic, or you can view it as imbued with this wonderful sense of awe and majesty that brings joy. It doesn't bring as much joy to most of us to think of the earth as a mechanistic creation. It gives us joy to think that there's a spark behind it all.
There is a spark behind it all. And okay, so this reminds me of there is a sentence in a poem, and it includes the sentence, "The soil is singing." Mm-hmm. And that sentence was in a Star Tribune article. And in the comments, someone said, "The soil does not sing," says science.
Except that now we have studies that show that if we let kids play in the dirt, their immune system's enhanced. So there is a relationship there. And it's not a relationship because we understand it. It's not a relationship because that's just the way it is. It's a relationship because we are of this planet. We evolved here. So of course we evolved in sympatical relationships with a variety of creatures visible to the naked eye and invisible. So all of those little microorganisms that are sitting in that dirt that are doing you so much good because you garden, because you play in the dirt, are amazing. And do we understand all of it yet? No. The studies are preliminary. We just know there's a connection right now. But that's an exciting connection. It's a connection
it's
a we should embrace.
It's a very exciting connection. I'm going to bring in some Giordano Bruno.
Yay.
This is part of my pink sunglasses. Okay, so Giordano Bruno, same time of Copernicus and Galileo, remember the song. So most people probably know those two latter names and don't know Bruno, even though Bruno, like those other two, had this radical idea for his time. He was saying that the Earth is not the center of the universe. Yeah, it's not the center of the universe. Instead, there's infinite planets and infinite worlds, and each one of those stars have planets around them. Not only did he say that, but he also said that all species are equally related to the same kindred. And he said this in like this book that I have in front of me is from 1596 or something like that.
Yes.
So 1590s.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but he came to these conclusions because he, one, did math, and two, talked to other people who had similar ideas so they could build on each other's thought processes.
So Giordano Bruno was a Jesuit priest. He was like a straight-A student. I mean, he was very bright for his time, extremely bright. He was he was a rock star in his age because he drew the attention of the kings because he could like recite everything, do all these intellectual feats. And he deeply studied ancient traditions, including Hampton's Seven, several banned books. Ooh. So, but the thing, so his book was on infinite worlds, but the other thing is he spent 7 years being tortured by the Catholic Church. And then they, for whatever reason, his ideas, he didn't hurt anyone.
Right.
But he believed in an infinite universe and he believed, and he was a very spiritual person. He was a very religious person. But for whatever reason, they like tied his mouth shut and burned him alive in the square in 1600.
And a lot of his ideas do seem to be reflected in some interpretations of the Bible. So it's, I don't think they're unreasonable conclusions for him to have come to.
Well, apparently he was like saying, come on, Pope, just talk to me. I can tell you where this is totally aligned with Scripture.
But you can't because I'm more important than you because I'm the Pope. So nope. That's it for you then.
Well, and part of it, you know, so part of why did humans have such a hard time comprehending that we were not the center of the universe?
Because we still have a hard time comprehending that. We still have a hard time comprehending that whatever divisions we've decided to create don't make us better than whatever's on the other side of that division. And the insanity of all of that is astounding to me. And the far-reaching consequences of those simple little ideas are profound. When you talk about things like structural racism, it absolutely, if it's baked into the cake, well, you don't know how that cake's going to turn out. You haven't, you know, it's got to go in the oven and then it affects other people. And I think that's part of where he was coming from, was these kernels of ideas and how they translate and reverberate out into the society around us. It is very much the role of the Magi. It is very much that role of, I want to understand the universe so I can help make it a better place. It is, it's
you
profound.
Know, I'm actually, I hadn't thought I would ever say this, but I'm mega. The female version. So we'll say, what do we mean when we say that we're, would you say you're mega too?
In that context, absolutely.
So what do you mean by we're mega?
So someone who continues to strive to understand the human condition, not just my own, but yours. And I think that's necessary. I think that's necessary for good healers, and that's what I've spent most of my life doing. I can't recommend an herb to you, for example, because it worked for me. You're not me. It's not – and that, I think that's herbalism when you have a chat with your friend. Oh, this thing worked really well for me. That I can't do that because that I know that's not effective. It is about respecting who you are as a person. It is about respecting your unique individuality and prizing it and valuing it for who you are. It is honestly, all of this conversation right now reminds me a lot of frequently when little kids come in the store, especially girls. I'm very fond of doing this with girls. I look at them and say, I can see that you are beautiful. I have eyes. I can tell that you're just absolutely the most beautiful girl. But there's something I can't tell by looking. Are you as smart as you are pretty? They always say yes. They inevitably say, oh, thank goodness. Then can you do me a favor and maybe your parents a favor? As you grow up, can you help make this a better world like us? Smiles, be, yes, I can do that. But that's the goal. To me, that's the goal. Can we figure out our place in the universe, as humble as it might be, which is, I think, part of what Bruno was saying, was that we're not the be-all and end-all. We're not the center of the universe. And then play a positive role in it, not just for ourselves, but for everyone around us. And I'm including the oak trees in that. Everyone around us.
And that including the oak trees. And even in one of his writings, you know, he says that humans don't understand the language of trees.
Yeah.
And just to talk that, about that joyfulness, because that's the other thing. So he ends this complicated book with this way. Your further friendship would be most acceptable. Then let us supper.
Yes.
I have to kind of connect that to food somehow, because it's Food Freedom Radio. But this is so connected to food, actually.
And the magic of sharing a meal is profound. You want to sit down with somebody you don't agree with? Do it over food. Do it sharing food and sharing. I don't think the modern restaurant will do it. I think you have to have a family-style meal where you're both taken from that same bowl because of that symbolism of we are all partaking in this together. I think that's what – go to Buca's if you have to go out because then at least you're getting joint dishes. Go eat Chinese because people instinctively want to share Chinese dishes. But it, yeah, I think it's amazing, the interconnectedness. And his work, having seen that from what you're saying, is beautiful to me.
It really is beautiful. And it's fun because I think it's also scientific. And so kind of getting back to this merger of spirituality and science. Right. And it's not – they're not opposed to each other.
No, no. And for centuries, they weren't. For centuries in herbalism, for example, you would learn that this herb is the third degree of Saturn. You would learn it in that – and it's a metaphor. It's a language to explain – help you remember what that herb's doing. Profound and beautiful. It also helps to explain the fact that we don't – haven't plumbed all of the mysteries of the universe yet. We don't actually have – everything perfect. We don't. We haven't crossed all
which
the T's.
Which is okay. We don't have. It's not over. It's never over. It's infinite. It's playful. It's a dance.
Exactly.
Okay. So we're dancing on Food Freedom Radio, and we're with herbalist Liz Johnson with Magus Books. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back for our last segment. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and very pleased to have in studio with me Liz Johnson. She's an herbalist and also co-owner of Magus Books and Healing Center. So tell us again about the location, and if people want to work with you, how do they do that? And
all right. So Magus Books and Herbs is located at 1848 Central Avenue Northeast. That's in Minneapolis, not too terribly far from 35W if you're coming from out of town or one of the suburbs. Free parking on street, so there's plenty of parking around usually. Delightful place. I would recommend coming there. You can make appointments for herbalism, Reiki, and polarity, and a variety of other healing services there with either myself or my manager, Brianna Crusan, by calling us at 612-379-7669. Or you can email us through the store. You can go to our website at magusbooks.com. And there's no N in Magus, by the way. It's not Magnus. It's magusbooks.com. And just email us through the store's website, and I will get that, and we'll get you set up if that's what you're interested in. If what you really want to do is come down and just see the selection, we're open 7 days a week, 360 degrees, oh, I'm sorry, days of the year, almost like it's a full circle. And noon to six are the hours. They're just consistently noon to six every day. So come by. We've got a variety of classes and events happening, as well as all of the healing services and all of the wonderful stuff from around the world and local artisans as well.
Yeah. Talk about some of the artisan and some of the products you have available.
So we do have – we've got a gallery classroom. And so right now you'll see in there a photographer's work that's up. We did our opening about a month ago, so it'll be up for a couple more months, and then we'll switch out. We've got books for – and the books are set up basically for an around-the-world religion tour, as well as books on various forms of divination. If you want to learn how to do something like tarot or work with runes or I Ching, the books are there for you. Sometimes there are classes on these subjects as well. We've got a class coming up on the Cathars on chaos magic. And for those of you who don't know, chaos magic is sort of embracing the universal flow and the fact that symbolism in your head might work differently from the standard definition of symbolism. So you get to sort of play with how you want to reinforce your own willpower and how you want to exercise your own personal magic in the world with that kind
so
of class.
I'm going to bring in some more Giordano Bruno,
yeah,
because I have in my hand right now Giordano Bruno, and of course he was murdered in 1600 very violently after spending 7 years in the Inquisition because he had the crazy idea that the earth wasn't the center of the universe. And unlike a lot of those other famous people, he didn't recant. He said, no, I really know that the earth is not the center of the universe. But he also has a book on magic. And at the time, everyone just believed in magic too.
They were one and the same at
yeah.
the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they all believed in magic, but he starts it off saying that there's many definitions as there are mages, meaning that we all find our own way and that there's not this coalescent. And
exactly. It's great when we find common ground. You know, red probably makes most people think of fire, probably makes most people think of hot. That's great. But why is orange traditionally connected to money? That has no bearing in modern American society. If you want
to, I didn't know orange was money. I thought green was.
Exactly. And that's what most Americans will think. So I think that's the more appropriate color choice for an American, despite the fact that if you're working with Bruno, he's going to tell you, no, green is about love. Why would you use green for money? That's insane. You'd use orange. That's mercury. Come on now. You know, green is Venus, and that's love. So that idea of placing it in your own context, and that your own context takes precedence over what any book tells you, over what any person says is the right thing, I think that's vital to life.
And that ultimately that trust in your own context,
yes,
and that personal relationship, yeah, and that deep trust of yourself and your, yes, own voice.
And checking on that every once in a while, because you can,
right,
throw yourself down a little rabbit hole of insanity.
You can be wrong.
You can be wrong. Your gut instinct can be wrong. So checking, you know, if everybody else in the room goes, really?
Yeah.
Maybe,
yeah,
think about it.
Yeah. a couple of the sentences from your website, may your heart, head, heart, and path always be in harmony.
Yes. Yeah, I do love that phrase. And it comes from my early religious training in one of these alternative religions. It was part of the ritual, actually. It was part of the individual blessings. And that was the blessing that was bestowed on everybody participating. May your head, heart, and path be always in harmony. How you feel, how you think, and the life you live being something that are not conflicted, so we can reduce things like, wonderful things like cognitive dissonance that make us all feel a little crazy.
Yeah, and this, we're down to our last 2 minutes. Because I am tired of the society making me crazy. And I love the story you shared about, you know, the little girl that you want to make the world a better place. And it's,
yeah,
music in here. I mean, I think we all want that.
Right. Right. And I think that if we can grow in our understanding of one another, we get closer to that. Whether that's like my herbal students in the 3-year herbal class program that we've got at the shop, my herbal students, they learn things like facial diagnosis, but they also learn how the organs are traditionally thought to connect with various emotions, and they start making changes in how they treat people. Oh, you sound really angry, but all I see are kidney things. That's probably your adrenals. That's probably fear. That's probably stress. What if I talk to you like you're scared instead of like you're angry? And they get better results. They come back and talk to me about it. It works. It works well.
Yes. And that, what you said there, there's a nugget in there that is so important. So a kid may be having a meltdown and our society might be yelling at them, you know, what a brat, what's going on, instead,
right,
of like being able to, you're in trouble right now. What's going on with you? And,
yeah.
And having that compassion and that, yeah, spaciousness.
Well, and the pressure, especially when we're talking about kids, the pressure on the parent sometimes to discipline the child in a more public way to make the other grown-ups feel good about what they've done is definitely out there. And it's a little bit scary, I think, to confront that pressure and say no to that pressure and say, nope, I'm going to take a minute first to take care of this child, whether they're mine or not.
And that's like going into your own heart space and being able to trust yourself so that you can be present to those you love.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of times I haven't done that. And
we're all imperfect.
Yeah.
And we all improve over time. But the more often I think we can present that, especially to someone who's growing up and relying on us, the more and better they're able to do it going forward. So that in the case of my own son, having a friend having a meltdown in part because of their autism and just being able to very calmly and gently intercede for them and go, nope, I understand that you're overstimulated right now and not that there is that vocabulary, but I'm going to take your seatbelt and I'm going to put it on for you and that's going to resolve the situation and then you can breathe. And get
Breathe.
Yourself together.
Get ourselves together. I want some good music. Wonderful show. Liz Johnson, I so forward stopping by Magus,
yeah,
Books and
Look
on Central.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Have a great week.
Thank you.